हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सनि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so then moving on to 10th canto. Okay.
It's only five chapters. Only 5 chapters this big.
Yeah, no, it's only 5 chapters this big, yeah.
Two serious chapters.
Yeah. I mean, you go with some of them, like, let's say, ill-motivated Dhritarashtra, and in the Krishna book, it's only 3 pages, so we'll probably have everything on 1 page, right? No, it's always those first pages are more. Plus, these first 13 chapters, Prabhupada's commentary? Or 14? 14. 13.
13.
13
and a half.
14. Do I hear 13 and 3/4? Okay. So those ones, because Prabhupada commented and all that, then there's going to be more. Plus, you're having to establish the whole thing. So just like there's more commentary in those first, I think it was 11 sutras and Vedanta Sutra, had the maximum commentaries like that. So like this, you'll have more here. And then we'll see at the end, it'll again come up. When you get into prayers of personified Vedas, you know, then you'll see again. It will go. So at the beginning and end, that's the Tatparya Linga. Okay, chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna. So Maharaj Parikit inquires about the pastimes of Krishna. On the plea of Mother Bhumi, the Devata has prayed to Lord Vishnu. And Vasudeva negotiates with Kamsa to spare Devaki's life. Chapter 2, prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. Sri Krishna makes suitable arrangements for his appearance and the prayers of the demigods. Chapter 3, the birth of Lord Krishna, the transcendental appearance of Lord Krishna, and the eternal position of Vasudeva and Devaki. Chapter 4, the atrocities of King Kamsa. Kamsa attempts to kill the eighth child of Devaki. This is like a... This, you got this one from the Sumerillium. Okay. It's all connected. It's all connected. Okay. Kamsa understands the error of his ways and begs forgiveness. Kamsa is influenced by his ministers. Chapter 5, the meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva. Sri Krishna's festive birth ceremony and Nanda Maharaj's visit with Vasudeva. Wow. Preface. So this is the canto preface. From Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.1. At the end of the 9th canto, 24th chapter, Sukadeva Goswami summarized the activities of Krishna. He spoke of how Krishna had personally appeared to reduce the burden on the earth, how he had manifested his pastimes as a householder, and how, soon after his birth, he had transferred himself to his Brajabhumi Leela. Parikrit Maharaj, being naturally a devotee of Krishna, wanted to hear more about Lord Krishna. Therefore, to encourage Sukadeva Goswami to continue speaking about Krishna and give further details, he thanks Sukadeva Goswami for having described the activities of Krishna in brief. Sukadeva Goswami had said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, known as Leela Purushottama, appeared as the son of Vasudeva, but immediately left his father's home and went to Vrindavan to expand his loving relationships with his confidential devotees. In Vrindavan, the Lord killed many demons, and afterwards he returned to Dwarka, where, according to Vedic principles, he married many wives who were the best of women. begot through them hundreds of sons, and performed sacrifices for his own worship to establish the principles of householder life. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.24.66. The supreme abode of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described in Brahma Samhita as the abode of Chintamani. Chintamani prakara sadmashu kalpa briksha laksha briteshu surabhir abhipalayantam. Brahma Samhita 5.29. The Vrindavan Dham on this earth is a replica of that same abode. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 8.20, in the spiritual sky there is another, eternal nature, transcendental to manifested and unmanifested nature. Right, because you have the manifest and the unmanifest. So separate from the Mahatattva and separate from the Avyakta or Pradhan. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you may say, oh, it's this but not that and something like that. Because otherwise the impersonalists will say we're going back to Pradhan. Yes. That's what all the other schools, their point is that perfection means winding things back up into Pradhan. And once you go back to that stage, then there is no disturbances. That's their understanding of liberation. So that's why then you have to say transcendental, manifested, and unmanifested. We'll just say, okay, well, it's just they're being thorough or something. But no, it's because the philosophies are like that. Because some will say that manifest, that's everything, and that the Lord comes in the mode of goodness, so therefore it's all within that kind of realm. Or he's beyond, and so therefore you go back to Pradhan. Or the Jaiminiists, then they'll be... that you could, by karma, just being here, and that way you'll be happy eternally. And so all these different philosophies then come up. It's like that. The manifested world can be seen in the form of many stars and planets, such as the sun and moon. But beyond this is the unmanifested, which is imperceptible to those who are embodied. And beyond this unmanifested matter is the spiritual kingdom, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as supreme and eternal. That kingdom is never annihilated. Although material nature is subject to repeated creation and annihilation, that spiritual nature remains as it is eternally. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that spiritual nature, the spiritual world is described as Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, or Braja Dham. So these are different ways we are dealing with it. The elaborate description of the above-mentioned shloka from the 9th canto, Jato Gata Pitri Grihad, Srimad Bhagavatam 9.24.66, we find here in the 10th canto. So these are the standard. We'll use Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, Braja Dham, like this. But only in the one before, the Vrindavan Dham on this earth is a replica of the same abode. Only in that context will you see then this will be called Gokul, there will be called Golok. Right? And then when you're making the difference between Braja and the rest of Golok, then you'll call the rest of Golok Golok, and you'll call Braja Gokul. Right? So just depending upon what their context, then they'll use these words. That's the thing, is that the words, you know, can be used in many places. That's why they become confusing. Right? And from Srila Prabhupada's summary of the first chapter of the 10th canto, when Sugadeva Goswami finished describing the dynasty of Yadu, as well as the dynasties of the moon god and sun god, Maharishi Parikhit requested him to describe Lord Krishna, who appeared with Baladev in the Yadu dynasty, and how Krishna performed his activities within this world. Krishna is transcendental, the king said, and therefore to understand his activities is the occupation of liberated persons. Hearing of Krishna Lila is the boat by which to achieve the ultimate goal of life. So it's the hearing is the boat. Now, what that boat means, maybe word out, you know, it's, you know, made of the Bhagavatam. It has so many pages, paper, ink, and that's not what we're talking about. We have to understand it's about the discussions about Krishna. That's the boat. That's the bridge. That's the connection. We get distracted, like if we sat down to Bhagavatam and then got into the kind of paper it is and what's the weight and where you get it and who makes it and what's the process of making it and then getting into the ink and then we get into the different types and then what's the effects of the different types and all that. Would that be a Bhagavatam class? No. Would that elevate someone to understand Krishna consciousness? No. Therefore, always seriously think about what you're using as a bridge that you call preaching. Right? Because the point is it's discussions about Krishna, that's the bridge. You know, whatever form. Like we see, Vedanta Sutra, we're talking about the platform of Brahman and transcendence. Whatever it is, that doesn't matter. But the point is, it's connected to Krishna. So, it's connected to one of the three features with the point of its being connected to the person. So, connecting to the person, we have the other two features, Brahman and Paramatma. That connects to the manifestation of the material world as Brahman. That connects to the jiva, who's conditioned trying to get to the transcendental platform. That way, so much technical you can use, but if the point is it's not about Krishna, then it's been lost. There is no bridge. You say it's a bridge, but it's neither a bridge because it's not preaching. Like that. One has to be very, very careful. Hearing of Krishna Lila is the boat by which to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Except for an animal killer or one who is following a policy of suicide, every intelligent person must strive to understand Krishna's activities. In other words, the animal killer and the person who is inclined towards suicide, either personal or on the platform, the Atma, you know, in other words, the impersonalist, then they can't understand this because they're so absorbed in themselves. That's the whole point. An impersonalist is totally absorbed in themselves. Someone who wants to commit suicide is totally absorbed in themselves. The mediator is totally absorbed in themselves. That's the whole problem. So when they identify in these ways, you can't preach to them. They can't understand this. But if somehow or another they get distracted from this mentality, at that point, then you can discuss, because then that identity is not there. Right? So that window, that's what you're trying to create. Right? So the different various ways that you use to catch attention, that's only that much. It's not about the bridge. It's about the bridge catches attention. Does that make sense? People can relate to the bridge. I can go over this to get to the other side. So that's the whole point. Then it's there. Krishna has threefold pastimes: the Braja Lila, Mathura Lila, and Dwarka Lila. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 90 chapters, which describe all these Lilas. The first four chapters describe Brahma's prayers for the relief of the earth's burden. They also describe the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chapters 5 through 39 recount Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. The 40th chapter describes how Krishna enjoyed in the water of Jamuna and how Akura offered prayers. Chapters 41 through 51, 11 chapters tell of Krishna's pastimes in Mathura. And chapters 52 through 90, 39 chapters relate Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. Right, so he sees you have that Sandhya is there.
Yeah.
He hasn't left, but he's still in. But it's a Krura, so you have the Dwarka element is there, that flavor, but it's still within Braj. You know, then you go to Mathura, then you go to Dwarka. Mm-hmm. Like that. And then Brahma's then prayers for relief of the earth's burden, how is that done? By Krishna's appearance, so those all go together. Mm-hmm. Right? So, chapters 29 through 33 describe Krishna's dancing with the gopis, known as the Rasa Lila. Therefore, these five chapters are known as Rasa Panchadhyaya. The 47th chapter, the 10th canto, is a description known as the Brahmar Gita. Right? That's also connected here. Mm-hmm. Means it describing the same, the mood, what's the bhava of these other five chapters. You know, mm-hmm. So one is, this is with Krishna, the other one is in separation. Mm. Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction. Pratigya. If religionists, philosophers, and people in general simply hear the activities of Krishna, they will be liberated. That's the whole point. It's just a matter of time once you start. Like, I remember, who was it? One devotee was telling me, he happened to be there. So one devotee from New York. And another devotee who had joined in New York. And the one devotee was there before and the other devotee had met. And something came up in the discussion that the first time he came to the temple and he engaged him doing something, then the other devotee who engaged him started laughing. Mm-hmm. And he was always, why were you laughing? So then, this is like 30 years later or something. And then he said, that's because I was thinking that you just walked into the temple, you didn't know what's going on, and you just saw something's happening in that, and then we engaged you in something. What you didn't know is that was the end of your material existence. So he's laughing about that. So that doubt was clear.
Good thing you didn't mention that at that time.
Yeah, that's another thing. But he was just laughing. Yeah, okay, this is it. He's just walked in off the street, and here it is, Krishna's engaged, and his material life's finished. But, if anyone willingly or unwillingly hears Krishna Katha, his bhava rog, the disease of birth and death, will certainly stop. So this thing, oh no, but if people don't like to get a bad opinion, no. It's, they have a bad opinion anyway, so it's not that that's changed. We're thinking, no, but you know, you don't want to. We didn't create the bad opinion; it's already there. Yes.
Sometimes we have the opposite, where we're kind of forcing it upon people because even if they don't like it, they'll still make benefit.
No, but the point is it still has to be in context of the people you're talking to, because people like to talk. And people like to hear. So talk about things in connection with Krishna that are in areas that they like to hear. But just to talk what I want to talk, and that, then we call that hard preaching, but technically that's not preaching.
It's not preaching.
Mm-hmm. Just like when we say soft, we don't actually talk about it, we just kind of tiptoe around. That's not preaching either. Preaching means you're actually showing them the situation they're in, how that connects with the Lord.
Engage with the person.
Yeah, you engage with the person. So it's actually personal. Because either the other two are impersonal. One, it's about yourself, this is what you like, and them as just a generic concept. And then the other side, because that's the conservative, then seeming liberal where it's soft, is that it's still about yourself because this is your value and you're taking everybody else as a generic. So they're both impersonal. So preaching means it's personal. You as a person, how to talk to them as a person, to understand Krishna as a person. That's what you're trying to get to. Now, how quickly or slowly they're going to move, that's another thing. But the point is that's the direction you're going. A practical example is Dhruva Maharaj, who at the end of his tapasya was fully satisfied. When the Lord wanted to give Dhruva a benediction, Dhruva refused it. To stop this repetition of birth and death, Krishna Katha, Krishna consciousness, is absolutely necessary. Not just, it's a nice thing, or we'll throw that in along with it, buy this and get this for free. No, it's absolutely necessary. That is the real thing, right? Krishna Katha is the real thing. Then other things can be thrown into the mix, right? Mm-hmm. But unless one hears Krishna Katha from a realized soul like Sukadev Goswami, one cannot relish the nectar of Krishna Katha, which puts an end to all material fatigue and enjoy the bliss of life and transcendental existence. It seems to be still...
Yeah. It's too bright. Let's see if it's
close. Yeah, no. Yeah, because of the roof. The ethereal effect. Like that. No, it's on. Just a little bit, though.
Huh? Curious.
Well, it's halo. We'll get into that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It means that it's interested, but there's a little bit of there's no. It's not respect. It's means you see something, you're impressed, you see straight, and when you turn your head sideways, that's when you that respect or that reverence is gone. So it can have the element of. So it's in the mood of. So it's just very, it means you, it can be on a positive, you're just very comfortable, very relaxed, feel very natural. Or it can be also disrespectful, like someone's doing something and they're doing something, huh? So it can have all those ranges. Because there's 33 Sanchari Bhavas, so they can all have, be used in so many unlimited ways. So that, this is probably just this here every day, it's quite natural, it's quite comfortable, so it's not.
We'll pass out neck braces for everyone.
Okay, so we're done. But that's sideways, not forward. that's a different. That's a sattvic bhav, you know, where they become stunned, or a anubhava, where they become drowsy. You know, like that's a different. That's not this one.
Different ecstasy.
Yes, very technical. But we'll get into that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yes. Okay. Okay, but unless one hears Krishna Katha from a realized soul like Sukadeva Goswami, one cannot relish the nectar of Krishna Katha, which puts an end to all material fatigue and enjoy the blissful life of transcendental existence. In relation to the Krishna conscious movement, we actually see that those who have tasted the nectar of Krishna Katha lose all material desires. Although the sound vibration of the transcendental qualities of the Lord is equally beneficial to all, for those who are muktas, liberated, is especially pleasing. It means everybody gets benefit, but those who are liberated means they've given up material desire, they get more benefit. So Krishna Katha is so nice that even if we have material desire, by hearing it we'll give up that material desire, then we'll be able to take full benefit. So that's the point, is that devotional service is its own support. It's not dependent on something else. So that when we say about the bridge, it is the bridge. It's just the others manifest so that you can appreciate it. But it actually is what is the form of the bridge. Like that. Yeah, so that's why then we hear from the authorities. Right? We're hearing from the Acharyas. We're hearing from Sukadeva Goswami, so we're not just hearing Bhagavatam other than that. Then we're hearing from the commentaries of the Parampara, hearing from the Acharya, who then tells us how to understand all that. Right? In other words, Prabhupada's purport is the central purport, because by that we can actually understand what the Acharyas are saying about what Sukadeva Goswami is saying. Like that. That's how it works. The mumukshus, persons desiring to be liberated, do not depend on the pleasures of the senses. Instead, they can concentrate fully on becoming liberated by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Karmis like to create something pleasing to their ears and hearts, and although they sometimes like to chant or hear the glories of the Lord, they do not do it openly. Right, so that's the difference. The those who are interested in liberation, it's direct that they're chanting, they're reading like that. Those who are actually karmis, they want their own benefit. But they're interested in something, then they do it not openly. That's why they hide their chanting, don't chant on beads, say that you don't have to do all these different things, you don't have to show you're a devotee, because they're actually interested in the effect of my own comfort in not acting like a devotee. I'm more comfortable like that. But there's an interest in Krishna consciousness. But they're actually come within this action of karma. They're not mumukshus. They're not serious about liberation. Like that. But by being in contact, if they hear from proper sources, there will be elevation. But the problem is so much more could be had. Yes?
So why would they join at the first place?
Because the material world is a difficulty. So basically what we want is we want our cake and want to eat it. So we want to be freed from material problems, but at the same time we don't want to give up the environments that create the problem. Right? It means as soon as there's a desire, the problems are there with it. They go together. They're not separate. Right? You know, you want to eat means you have to chew. Right, swallow, you know, digest. Then all these things go along with it. So it's a matter of there is an anxiety. This can remove the anxiety, but there's too much attachment to one's own conditioning that you're the most comfortable in that, but can't see actually how to connect that, what's the principle of that, and connect it to Krishna. Because there's a reason for that. It's not the thing itself. The thing's dead matter. So it can't actually have anything. So there's a principle within it that you're... Does that make sense? You relax. Just like, let's say, okay, I like the Western dress because it's comfortable. But then that's the point, is that comfortableness is the thing, not what you're wearing. Because come back after 5 years, you may be wearing something different. Right? So that's the thing, is that comfortableness is what you're looking for. So then that's what you have to look at. What you have to know is that's Krishna. And then from that, Vedic has a manifestation of that comfort in its dress. You know what I'm saying? So the point is you can find what you're looking for. You just have to be intelligent enough. But if you're too attached, then you can't. You won't be able to see that. Is that so? We're having to move through here, because in here, that what they're doing here, these devotees are doing that. That is their nature. Just because something else is not mentioned, that's because it's not important. Right? It doesn't add to the mood that's there. What's mentioned, that's what's important. So that's what we're going to focus on. We try to make other things important, that's our immaturity. Because we're trying to take what's important to us, and through our ropia, project that onto the Lord. But that's not important. So that's why we stick to what the acharyas give, how they give it, how it works, like that. Mm-hmm. That works for us. Right, so therefore you get, like, that's Prabhupada's point in the acharyas on the Bhagavad Saptas. They want to hear something nice. They don't want to hear about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. They don't want to hear about that. So they only want to hear some nice passages. So sometimes they'll hear about that, pleasing and all that. Even then they fall asleep. You've noticed in these Bhagavad Saptas that they'll be going along, and then suddenly spontaneously a little kirtan will start. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? That meant the audience was falling asleep. So those who are good at this, then they start a kirtan, and then everybody wakes up and that, and then after that's finished, they go back into the pastime. That's just standard stuff. You know? I'm sorry. That's just the way it works. So it's not that they're actually that focused on Krishna consciousness. No, it's just even the pastimes of the Lord, even they get bored. Right. Devotees, however, always spontaneously hear, chant about, and remember the activities of the Lord. By this process, they are fully satisfied, even though these may seem like topics of sense gratification. Simply by hearing the because it means if what the Lord is doing with the devotees, you may think, oh, that's sense gratification. He's just playing with the cowherd boys, stealing the other's lunch, sitting down and eating lunch, you know, doing all these things. That's just sense gratification. But that's the point, is that it's about Krishna. That's why it's not sense gratification. Because our idea of not sense gratification means not engaging the senses, because we're coming from an impersonalistic background. That's just the way it is. One may say, no, we're not coming from that. But by Western definitions, is if God's a person, what does he look like? So all religions will say he doesn't have a form. Mm-hmm. So that means that. And the atheist, then he doesn't have a form anyway. So where in the non-Vedic is personal? It doesn't exist. Hence, nirvishe shunyavadi. That's where it comes up. So now we're getting used to this. Right? So we're culturally there. Now those who follow the Vedas, culturally they're following what's personal, though they may be impersonalists. So ultimately, if you're not interested in God consciousness, it has that aspect. But at least culturally, then it can function more personally. Does that make sense? And then it just makes it that easier. Simply by hearing the transcendental narrations of the Lord's activities, Parikshit Maharaj was liberated. He was therefore Shrotamano Bhirama. That is, he glorified the process of hearing. This process should be accepted by all living entities. Right? That's the basic point. Now we can say, but why is he talking about this so strong and all that? We do have to remember we have spent 9 cantos getting up to this point. So at this point, if we can't be direct, when can we be?
So it's not actually strong.
Yeah.
It's just real.
It's just we're just dealing with reality straight. So that's why we're here at this point. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's what the 9 cantos are for, to clear any doubts so that we won't see these topics as sense gratification. Like that. That's the whole idea. We'll see that this is perfection. Chapter 1 summarizes questions and answers. Many statements of Srimad Bhagavatam may be quoted to describe the glories of Maharaj Parikshit. And the following questions spoken by Maharaj Parikshit himself at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 10.1.1-12, may be quoted to show the greatness of his devotion to Lord Krishna. Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 50. Maharaj Parikit asks Srila Sukadeva Goswami's questions 10.1 through 8 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 1, 10.1 from 10.1.7. Lord Sri Krishna, appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings, by his own potency, in the forms of eternal time, that is, as Paramatma and as Virat Rup, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life. Kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. So it's interesting. The forms of eternal time. So eternal time is Paramatma and like that, because we have something like time is, but Krishna says he's time. That's all the different features. So the Virat Rup Paramatma, that's how he's manifesting his time feature, like that, or his time feature is being manifest to thee. Srila Sukadeva, because he's first. Srila Sukadeva Goswami addresses this request throughout the rest of the canto. Question 10.2 from 10.1.8. My dear Sukadeva Goswami, you have already explained that Sankarsana, who belongs to the second quadruple, appeared as the son of Rohini, named Balaram. If Balaram, so second quadruple means the first is the original, right? Then you have the second means that he's going that expansion that's in Dwarka. So Vasudev, Shankarsha, Prajumna, Ariruddha, Krishna and Dwarka, Balaram and Dwarka, and then Prajumna, Ariruddha. So they're coming, they're a specific, just like the Purusha avatars. Then they're expanded from that original Sankarsana, like that. So then, you know, just bringing that point. If Balaram was not transferred from one body to another, how is it possible that he was first in the womb of Devaki and then in the womb of Rohini? Kindly explain this to me. This question is addressed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.20. The Supreme Lord, addressing Yogamaya, said, the son of Rohini will also be celebrated as Sankarsana because of being sent from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. He will be called Rama because of his ability to please all the inhabitants of Gokula. And he will be known as Balabhadra because of his extensive physical strength. Question 10.3 from 10.1.9. Why did Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father, Vasudeva, and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? Right. So we see as Balaram is transferred from Mathura to Vrindavan, but then subtly within the womb, and then Krishna, he takes birth there and then transfers there. So the whole point is they're going from Mathura to Vrindavan. Right. So they're first appearing, so you understand they're the supreme, and then like this, because people don't understand the human form, right? That's how we started today's discussion. It was about the human form. Right? So that's the whole point, is that that's what's not understood, though that's the highest. So if you say he's God, okay, then that's okay. And then he says, then people will adjust with it. So for those from this side, then they know that he does that just for others to appreciate. And those from the Vaikuntha side, then okay, you know, he is God, but see, then he does this wonderful pastime. And then those who aren't from this, from the spiritual side, they're from the material side, then they're going to look at it, oh, okay, so he's God, he's not just one of us. And then they'll take it more seriously. So it works for everybody. Right? For those who say, nobody comes to that, but that's not so sweet and that, I prefer the sweeter, they're not on that sweet side. Otherwise, why can't they taste the sweetness? That he makes that. He hides himself like that. He does. Why can't they taste that? You know, but then at the same time, it's, oh, when, you know, Radharani dresses up as a cowherd boy and all this and that. Why is it she can disguise herself and that's so wonderful, but Krishna disguises himself and it's, oh, but that's so, that's, you know, we don't. Right? So that's the point. So whenever you hear talk like that, that's not on that side, meaning spiritual. It's on this side, meaning material. These queries are answered initially in chapter 3 and also in chapter 11, where it is mentioned that after consulting the village elder named Upananda, The entire community moved from Gokula, Braja, Mahavan, and Brihadvan to the village of Vrindavan. Then they moved to Nandagram, where Lord Krishna engaged in his Kishore pastimes from 6 years and 8 months to age 10. At 10 years and 7 months, Sri Krishna went to Mathura. Yeah. Question 10.4 from 10.1.10. Lord Krishna lived both in Vrindavan and Mathura. What did he do there? Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers this question throughout this canto until chapter 51. Question 10.5 from 10.1.10. Why did he kill Kamsa, his mother's brother? Such killing is not at all sanctioned in the Shastras. This question is addressed in general throughout the canto, but specifically in verse 10.44.48. The Lord causes the appearance and disappearance of all beings in this world, and he is their maintainer as well. One who disrespects him can never prosper happily. In Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada elaborates, when Krishna killed Kamsa, he killed his maternal uncle, which is against the regulations of Vedic. how big is this? Okay, we'll finish this one. Which is against the regulations of Vedic injunctions. Although Krishna is independent of all Vedic injunctions, he violates the Vedic injunctions only in inevitable cases. Kamsa could not be killed by anyone else but Krishna. Therefore, Krishna was obliged to kill him. Because otherwise, it's like, why else? Because he's a demon, he's harassing everybody, he has to be killed, but no one else can kill him, he's so powerful. Therefore, only Krishna can kill him.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Vrinda ki.